Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you're listening that you are having a great end of your week. It's hard to believe it's January 15th. We're already 2 full weeks into the new year, the 12th game of the Grizzlies season so far, 3 weeks into the season. It feels like it was just a few days ago that the season was starting. We were right around Christmas. Everybody was excited about 2020 finally ending, and yet here we are, you know, right into the swing of things when it comes to 2021. But thankfully, that has included a better-than-expected start for the Grizzlies at 5-6, you know, considering all the injuries that they have certainly dealt with. And that is what we're going to talk about in the first segment. Some injury news on a variety of different levels that have to deal with the Grizzlies as well as their opponents that could lead to a wide variety of outcomes this weekend. We'll get into all the details in the first segment, obviously centered on the great news regarding Ja Morant. In the second segment, I'll talk about how as a player you can still remain polarizing, but yet take significant steps in your progression as a player. We'll talk about that in the second segment about a specific Grizzly, as well as in the third segment. I'll preview the matchup tonight with the Timberwolves, as well as hit on a bit of things that the Grizzlies need to continue to do to really start to put themselves in a position to remain competitive as their schedule gets tougher coming up over the next week. Of course, you can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at StatsSAC, the show wherever you find podcasts available, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the podcast app on your phone. Listen, subscribe, review, let us know what you think. We always want to make sure we're providing content that is relevant to our listeners' preferences. And of course, my name is Sean Coleman. I have been doing blogging, you know, covering the Grizzlies now for about 2.5 years, been doing podcasts for 2 years. Love every bit of it that I do over at Grizzly Bear Blues and now here at Locked On Grizzlies. And the best part about it is that I get to enjoy talking about passions of mine, the Grizzlies, the NBA sports, while also interacting with others that share my passions. And that makes every moment that I get to do this as cherishable as possible. So it's always a great and wonderful opportunity to get to enjoy, you know, celebrating the success of the team that we all love, and that is the Memphis Grizzlies. And of course, there's reason to celebrate from yesterday's news when it comes to the injury report. Now, as we all know, if you've been covering the Grizzlies now for the over 18 months that this new regime, front office regime, has been in place, they are very tight-lipped when it comes to injury information. You hardly get any type of updates when it comes to players being held out due to injury unless you are following the Grizzlies PR Twitter page. And a byproduct of that, though, is that if there is a significant talent that has been held out due to injury, the moment that their status improves or changes, it's like there's a big standing ovation across Grizzlies social media. And that, of course, is what happened yesterday. It was a wonderful sight to see the news that Ja Morant has been upgraded to questionable when it comes to his ankle. Now, to track back a bit, of course, we all know back on December 28th against the Nets, it was a Monday, a couple Mondays ago, Morant went up to make a play on the ball, landed on his ankle. Traumatic moment for a few minutes. It looked a lot worse than it actually was, but thankfully within an hour, we knew that it was a sprained ankle. Now, it was revealed that the time frame was going to be 3 to 5 weeks. And of course, knowing the Grizzlies, how they've handled Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr., and others in the past, how they're handling Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr. now, when the time frame was given of 3 to 5 weeks from December 28th, we thought that it was likely going to be 5 weeks. But that's the cautious approach of the Grizzlies. If you ask anybody that has followed Ja Morant in his, you know, nearly now a year and a half of being with the Grizzlies, cautious is not a word that is in that man's dictionary. So the other thing was that while the thought was the Grizzlies probably would have preferred for it to be 5 weeks to make sure he was more than healthy, we now are, you know, starting to see, you know, the coming to fruition the thought many had when it comes to Morant, it was going to be much closer to 3 weeks when he would be back. And of course, the game against the Suns on Monday would be 3 weeks out from when the injury happened. And it looks like that could be the timeline that Morant is on. In regards to his availability, because he is questionable, we have seen other Grizzlies recently who have reached a questionable status and then have been deemed available by game time during the same time frame that they were made available. The day before the game, they were made, you know, they were upgraded to questionable, and then at game time the next night, they were available to play. However, the first game that DeAnthony Melton was back from health and safety protocols, he did not play. Wednesday night when John Contra came back from an ankle injury, he did not play. So I would be, especially considering it's John Morant, I would be very, very surprised if John Morant actually played tomorrow night. That's not questioning Morant or anything like that. It's just that the thought process of him working his way back from injury, I think that the Grizzlies are probably going to still take caution, be smart with it, and probably Saturday or Monday is probably going to be a more likely target date for Morant. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if Morant played 30 minutes all three nights of this three games and four night stretch to book in the weekend, but again, I would be surprised if Morant actually played tomorrow night. But of course, that wasn't the only injury news that may impact the Grizzlies this weekend that was revealed yesterday. Not only is there a question of whether or not Morant is going to play tonight, it still is kind of up in the air whether the Grizzlies may have a game tonight. While on the Grizzlies injury report, there was good news with Morant, you know, reaching a questionable status. On the Timberwolves injury report, it was discovered that two players that played Wednesday night, Ricky Rubio and Juancho Hernangómez, they both are going to be held out for tonight's game when it comes to the NBA's health and safety protocols. The significance of that is this: that was done after the Grizzlies played them on the court Wednesday night. And as we've seen in other games, when one team has started to experience the impact of COVID-19 through positive tests and contact tracing, that contact tracing extended to the opponent that the impacted team played the game closest to when it was discovered COVID was having an impact. For instance, when it comes to back a few days ago, when the Washington Wizards, who were likely going to be without playing for a week due to a mini outbreak going on their roster, when the Washington Wizards played the Suns a few days back, both the Wizards and the Suns have had their games canceled due to the contact tracing from the Wizards' positive tests. That, in of itself, has now made the Martin Luther King Jr. Day game in question, because the Suns game on Saturday night has already been canceled. The Wizards game for both Sunday and Monday have been canceled. So if the Suns situation does not improve, the Martin Luther King Jr. Day game between the Suns and the Grizzlies could be in question. So as far as tonight's games goes, there hasn't been any reports as of this moment from Shams or Woj like there usually would be if there was a concern. It's just the reporting from the Timberwolves injury report that's kind of been eye-opening. But don't be surprised if there is more information about tonight's game between the Grizzlies and the Timberwolves. I don't want to speculate, but just don't be surprised if there's another update. Hopefully that game will be played, but I do think that it is fair to question whether or not the Grizzlies game against the Suns on Monday will actually be played unless the Suns get some immediate improvement with their situation. So legitimately, there could be an outcome this weekend where the Grizzlies could have multiple games that they could not play, or we could see them play all three games and Morant himself play in two of them. So just a wide variety of potential outcomes this weekend. So make sure that you stay tuned to all the news that's coming. So hopefully the Grizzlies will be able to keep things as normal as possible, especially with welcoming back Morant as they start to take on tougher competition, especially Saturday against Philadelphia and potentially Monday. Though they'll be at home, they'll certainly be playing some very talented teams. Hopefully we'll get these games in to where the Grizzlies will not be, you know, just another team whose schedule is heavily impacted by the influence of COVID, and hopefully Ja Morant will return and everybody and will continue to progress in terms of our injuries and remain competitive, obviously, in terms of hopefully getting a few wins as well. But one big factor in the Grizzlies' ability to get wins so far, as we've discussed extensively here at Locked On Grizzlies, is their defense. But there's been one individual who has played a significant role in how well the Grizzlies' defense has performed. However, he still remains polarizing in terms of his overall performance. Coming up, I'll explain how a player can both remain polarizing yet also take significant progression as a player, and how the outcome can certainly remain positive even if they may not be in the most ideal role. We'll be right back here at Locked On Grizzlies. If there's been one sad thing about this week, it's that the College Football National Championship came and went on Monday night, so the college football season is over. However, the NFL playoff season is in full swing. 8 teams, 3 more weeks of competitive football over the next 4 weeks, 3 weeks of competitive football to determine the Super Bowl champion. Obviously, you've got the NBA schedule in full swing coming up. You've got hockey now in place. Obviously, other sports are on the horizon. Whatever sports leagues you choose to cheer for, I've got a place for you that can really, we know you have fun watching sports, but what if you can continue to enhance your fun by also profiting off your fandom of sports as well? And I've got the one place that you can go that can allow for you to do that, the one place we've got you covered, and the one place that you can trust, and that's BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag and use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. If it's a sport league or a sports team that you cheer for, BetOnline.ag likely has you covered. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at BetOnline_AG to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your sign-up bonus. Hashtag BetOnline. 2020 is over. It's time for a fresh start and for a few more wins. Now, if you're betting this year and you want more wins, listen to Locked On Bets with your boy Q and Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports. They are picking college basketball, football, and NBA locks all winter long. Subscribe to Locked On Bets wherever you get your podcasts and see how well your profits can improve. Coming up tomorrow on Locked On Grizzlies, I'll have our latest nitty-gritty grind session looking at how the Grizzlies will match up against the Philadelphia 76ers, a team who certainly is going to be an upgrade in terms of talent. You know, if the 76ers, I know they've had their own, you know, bit of bad luck with injuries. If the roster is fully available for them, obviously a bit of an uptick in talent for the Grizzlies, certainly going to be a challenge. We'll see, you know, where the Grizzlies may, you know, struggle and succeed Saturday night against the Philadelphia 76ers. And then on Monday, in anticipation of, you know, the always wonderful and significant Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I will be glad to welcome back to the show Joe Mullinax to kind of discuss, you know, the Grizzlies, you know, fifth of the way through the season checkpoint. What's impressed him? What does he think may be a bit of fool's gold, sustainable, and overall where he thinks this team is as they progress through the season, and hopefully we'll get back healthy as they embrace a tougher part of the schedule. To follow up with our first segment, I do just want to clarify any of the conversation or the thoughts around the Grizzlies games this weekend. There's been no indication from, you know, verifiable sources or anything such as that, that any of the Grizzlies games this weekend so far are trending towards not happening. However, just reading tea leaves, as well as, you know, just applying logic from how similar situations have been handled around the league, just saying that the possibility is there where at least one of the Grizzlies games, you know, Friday tonight, Saturday night, or Monday could potentially be in jeopardy. Hopefully they will not, but it's just certainly a storyline to follow as we progress through the weekend. But one storyline that I could certainly say has been, you know, of great interest for Grizzlies fans coming into going through all of 2020, and coming into 2021, is that of Dylan Brooks. And it's kind of been crazy, you know, the ups and downs that we've seen with Brooks. You know, to start, you know, going back a year ago, the opinion of Brooks basically was on its way up to the point of peaking because of how good of a January he really had, emerging as a true scoring threat to support Jaren and Ja as the Grizzlies were going through a very successful January, one in which Taylor Jenkins would wind up being coach of the month. Well, of course, that resulted around the trade deadline last year with Brooks getting an extension, a 3-year, $35 million extension. Now, at the time, there were several folks who thought that he was very deserving, and I don't think anybody debated that he certainly had earned the extension. However, some, such as myself, were a bit skeptical that the type of play that he had shown in January would be what he would that he would be able to sustain it as competition got a bit tougher. And it certainly seemed as if there was a bit of validity to that thought, because as the Grizzlies' schedule got a bit tougher coming into February and through the suspension of the season, Dylan Brooks' production really did fall off in terms of his contributions to the team. And then, of course, we go into the bubble over the summer. Obviously, Dylan Brooks, the up and down performances, you know, he was the main reason we won the games that we did. He also was a big reason we lost several of the games that, unfortunately, we had a chance to emerge as a victor in. And so, obviously, it certainly seemed through both the part of the 2019-2020 season that happened before the suspension, as well as the bubble. It certainly was fair to label Dylan Brooks as polarizing. Good Dylan, bad Dylan. That was a popular phrase that was used. Jekyll and Hyde, however you want to describe it. It certainly was fair to question, you know, what the true value of Dylan was, but it also needed to be, you know, understood that Brooks is in a position where he, I guess you could use the word miscast, you've seen several people talk about it. Brooks likely is a player who is playing in a position that is more than he should be. He probably is actually a 20 to 25 minute night, sixth or seventh score man off the bench, a sixth man, if you will, in the league. So the more that he plays the 30 to 35 minutes each night, while you do see some flashes of his strengths, there's going to be more opportunities in which you see his weaknesses. And of course, you know, his profile as a volume quantity shooter, it certainly has its highs and it certainly has its lows. Well, this season, going into this season, not much has changed as far as his scoring profile goes. Yes, Dylan has continued the theme of when he scores 20 or more points, the Grizzlies are now 4-1 this season. When he doesn't, the Grizzlies, I believe, now are 0-6. But the thing about it is that, yes, his scoring certainly has remained the same that it has been, you know, throughout his career. As a matter of fact, when you look at his per 36 numbers compared to last year versus this year, it's amazing how similar they are. For instance, last year, per 36 minutes, Dylan averaged 18.2 shots a game. This year, he's averaging 19.7. That's understandable due to the fact that he's playing a bigger role. Field goal percentage-wise, last year, he was at 40.7%. This year, he's at 38.7%. A big reason why, though, is because in the 2019-2020 season, Dylan shot 36% from three on 7 attempts per 36 minutes. This year, on 8 attempts per 36 minutes, he's shooting 32%. As far as his two-point shots go, he's right around the same range, right around 44%. So the drop-off in his accuracy from the field is the fact that he's shooting from further distance. As a matter of fact, the overall shot distance, you know, while it is relatively the same, he's averaging more threes per game. But the thing about it is that there are other ways, despite the fact that his scoring profile has certainly remained similar to what it was, and that is what is polarizing, obviously, about his performances. He has shown significant progression in impactful ways in other areas. On offense, as he stated that he wanted to do coming into the season, Dylan Brooks has taken a significant step when it comes to his playmaking ability. Last year, he had a career-high 10.5 assist percentage with a 25.2% usage rate. This year, he has a 16.8 assist percentage in a 28.3% usage rate. Now, obviously, with the more that he's being used, his turnovers have gone up as well. But we've seen the fact that Dylan certainly has improved his overall ability to make plays for other players. Friends of the show, Connor Dunning and Parker Fleming, who have started a new podcast called Hoops Island, in which they really focus on certain Grizzlies and other players around the league as to why, polarizing players, as to why they certainly should be, you know, valued. Dylan, they have been on the quote-unquote Dylan Brooks Island for years now, but Parker, you know, is just a wonderful source of statistics. He showed a great statistic yesterday in which he said Dylan Brooks, last year in over 70 games, there were only 4 games in which Dylan Brooks had 4 more assists. This year, Dylan Brooks already has 5 games in which he has 4 more assists. So that progression, that maturation in Dylan Brooks' game shows the better decision-making that we all had hoped for. It may not be significant. Even if it is incremental, it still is an improvement, and it certainly has been needed with the Grizzlies' best talents unavailable. But the clear area where he has progressed to the point that his overall value as a player, in my opinion, has progressed, is the significant improvement of him as a defender. Now, Dylan has always given effort, and he's always been someone that's been fully all for rising to the challenge, guarding the opposing team's best player in a lot of situations. The problem is that through his aggressive style, which he has to display due to a bit of below average athleticism, it's taken Dylan a little bit of time, especially in getting comfortable in Taylor Jenkins' system, to really ease into being comfortable with his defensive approach. And last year, though he did flash good defense at times, he also led the league in fouls. Well, the thing about it is that this year, Dylan started out with the same issues. I believe that in his first three games, he had five or more fouls in each game, and he also fouled out of one of them. But the thing is that as time has gone on, there has been a clear and significant upgrade in Dylan's effectiveness as a defender in many different ways. For one, when it comes to the fouls, before the game on Wednesday night against Minnesota, Dylan had gone seven games with four or less fouls each game. He had not got more than four fouls in each game of the last seven games before Wednesday night's game against the Timberwolves. Marked improvement from where he was last year and earlier this year. But the other thing about it is that, as we've discussed, I wrote about it over at Grizzly Bear Blues yesterday. I've talked about it numerous times here. The disruption and chaos that the Grizzlies are causing on defense, especially on the perimeter, Dylan Brooks is in the center of that as a defender because he stays in discipline, he stays in position, and he is turned into a maestro when it comes to using his hands and making it a nightmare for the players that he guards. Statistics also back this up. Before Wednesday night's game against the Timberwolves, Dylan was near the top of the league in several impressive defensive categories. He was in the top five of the league in individual defensive rating for all players who had played nine or more games and averaged more than 30 minutes a night. Overall, he is also top 10 in the league when it comes to players who have played at least 10 games in both steals and deflections. Dylan's commitment through his constant effort and his constant desire to improve as a player is shining through on both ends of the court, but especially on defense. And he has been one of, if not the main reason, why the Grizzlies roster, as depleted as they are and without their best talents, they have been able to create an identity for themselves that has allowed for them to remain competitive and also allowed for them to get needed wins to be at the record that they are at. So Dylan Brooks is a perfect example of how a player can remain polarizing, but also certainly show significant progression and increase his overall value. Yes, Dylan Brooks probably is who he is on offense, and that is someone that in an expanded role you're going to have to take the good with the bad. There's going to be good nights and there's going to be bad nights. However, just like there was Wednesday night when it came to him starting out, I believe 1-for-9 from the field, he still was able to contribute 6 assists and help get good stops against Malik Beasley and the other Timberwolves players in the fourth quarter to really allow for the Grizzlies to pull ahead and win. So while Dylan may always be who he is right now on offense, and that's best in the six-man role, the improvements that he's shown as a playmaker and especially the improvements that he's shown on defense, that cannot be ignored. And if you want to, if you want to continue being skeptical of the actual value Dylan offers, that's fine. But it's hard to deny the true impact that he's making on this team because of his commitment to get better, which he has done both offensively and defensively. And hopefully, as our best talents come back, Dylan will continue to be able to make that impact to allow the Grizzlies to have as good a chance as possible as making the playoffs. But the Grizzlies' first step towards doing that is tonight against the Minnesota Timberwolves. In the fourth quarter, the Grizzlies' defense and offense really shine through. However, I'm sure if you ask Taylor Jenkins in the roster, they would much rather prefer it being that way for all three quarters instead of how the first three quarters of Wednesday night's game occurred. Coming up, I'll talk about some adjustments the Grizzlies can make tonight that hopefully will allow for them to reach 500 before they face tougher competition over the weekend. Go behind the scenes of the game you love and get all sides of the story with the Rejecting the Screen podcast. Each week, Noah Kozlov and Adam Stanko get personal while interviewing players, coaches, media members, all the people who make the NBA happen. Subscribe to Rejecting the Screen wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. So as we discussed, you know, going into Wednesday night's game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Obviously, the Timberwolves had a 3-7 record versus the Grizzlies' 4-6 record, and the Grizzlies were coming off two victories in which they continued to validate their identity as being a clear difference-making defensive teams with incremental improvements on offense. However, the Grizzlies, as myself and others, and especially Coach Taylor Jenkins in leading up to the game, emphasized, there was clearly going to be an upgrade in offensive capabilities with the Timberwolves that the Grizzlies had not encountered when they had played the version of the Nets that they had played, when they had played the Cavaliers in recent games, so on and so forth. Well, in this game, that certainly was the case. This Minnesota Timberwolves team was clearly clicking. If you know, with some folks that I follow through Timberwolves social media, you know, Karl Anthony Towns looked like his old self coming off of injury, and many said that both Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell had the best starts to their games that they had this season, and it clearly shined through. And the thing about it is that unfortunately, when that type of offensive success is going on for the Grizzlies' opponents, the Grizzlies are going to have to make threes to really have a chance to stay, to stay close in the game. Well, unfortunately, the threes were just not falling. Another thing that just unfortunately was not working out was that Dylan Brooks and Kyle Anderson were not seeing their shots fall either. Thankfully, the Grizzlies' depth once again emerged. Great efforts from Brandon Clark, Grayson Allen, and Xavier Tillman made up for the lack of scoring that came from Brooks and Kyle Anderson. And of course, the Grizzlies' success in the paint, getting more rebounds, creating more turnovers, that certainly allowed for them to have success as well, despite the fact that they missed several easy shots. So the Grizzlies' ability to get to the rim and get easy shots, as well as their depth providing support, despite their inability to make threes, is what really kept the game close. Unfortunately, in that third quarter, that's really when the trio of Karl Anthony Towns, Malik Beasley, and D'Angelo Russell shine through. And that's when, at the end of the third quarter, as I mentioned on yesterday's podcast, when it came to the trio of Karl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, and Malik Beasley having 65 points versus Valanciunas, Brooks, and Anderson for the Grizzlies having 21, that's something Minnesota would have taken any day, every day, 100 times out of 100. And it showed through with the Timberwolves having a 10-point lead. But of course, the Grizzlies were able to come back. They were able to make adjustments defensively to slow both Russell and Anthony Towns. They started making threes, and they obviously had their offensive flow in place. Well, basically, the key to tonight is this. Whatever the Grizzlies did in the fourth quarter on Wednesday night, start the game out doing that exact same thing. And the reason why that is because of this. The Grizzlies going into this game, Minnesota adjusted to what the Grizzlies had been able to do. Brandon Clark mentioned it after the game on Wednesday. The early struggles that the Grizzlies had on offense is that they allowed for Russell and Beasley and Towns to get too many rhythm opportunities. They had too much time to set their shots up without being heavily guarded or contested. Well, as soon as the Grizzlies made that adjustment in the fourth quarter, Minnesota was able to do that because they found ways to get their players open from having watched how the Grizzlies had been defending in previous games. So Minnesota started the game off by adjusting to what the Grizzlies had done in previous games. The Grizzlies finally adjusted back in the fourth quarter by trapping D'Angelo Russell, as Brandon Clark had said, and then also making sure that Karl Anthony Towns was marked every time he had the ball in his hands to where his shots were going to be contested. And there were several other shots contested in that fourth quarter. So if the Grizzlies' defense coming into the game made Minnesota specifically play an offense that they felt would give them a better chance, the Grizzlies then adjusted in the fourth quarter, and it obviously made all the difference in the world. Well, the key for the Grizzlies is to do exactly that going into this game. Let the flow of the offense get going. Find good shots for Kyle Anderson. Find good shots for Dylan Brooks to space the floor. Don't focus, though. Don't forget focusing on the paint. As a matter of fact, that probably should be the approach. You know that you could score in the paint against this Minnesota Timberwolves team. Emphasize that first, and then off of that, that's how you will open up the shots for Dylan Brooks and Kyle Anderson that hopefully will start to fall. But on defense, it's also the fact that you need to put as much pressure on D'Angelo Russell as possible. Don't let him get into enough space where he can do all the moves that he needs to move to get as comfortable of a look of a shot as possible and be able to start hitting those shots and getting to a rhythm. So the Grizzlies were able to come up with a recipe that really worked in the fourth quarter on Wednesday night, dominating the paint. Off of that, opening up the perimeter to where finally they got some good looks that they converted at the end of the game to pull ahead from Minnesota and maintain the lead. But on defense, really making life tough for D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. Malik Beasley had 28 points. I think the Grizzlies are going to be just fine 10 out of 10 times if Malik Beasley is the leading scorer for the Minnesota Timberwolves. But one thing that the Grizzlies cannot do is hope luck is on their side twice and allow for the trio of Beasley, Towns, and Russell to get off to a really productive start again, because this time around, Minnesota's going to make adjustments as well. But that's the exact thing that the Grizzlies need to do. Take whatever you did in the fourth quarter, start the game off that exact same way, pressuring defense, focusing on the paint on offense, letting that set up high percentage shots from the outside. Apply that at the beginning of the game, and then see if Minnesota can adjust back. Maybe they do, and then you've got to make other adjustments, or maybe they don't, and it puts you in a position to win. So that seems to be the mindset tonight that will make the most sense. With the things that worked in the fourth quarter on Wednesday night, apply those same principles to begin the game. Hopefully you get off to a better start because your defense is able to get more stops and is able to limit the trio of Towns, Beasley, and Russell, and your own players are able to hit their shot while the rest of the Grizzlies' depth finds good opportunities in the paint. The Grizzlies have a perfect recipe for success that they know was wildly effective in the fourth quarter on Wednesday night. The best thing for them to do tonight is to apply those same principles and put the pressure on Minnesota to adjust for them to be able to stop the Grizzlies enough to have a chance to win the game. I think the Grizzlies have a good chance, especially if Morant can make an appearance to win tonight's game. If they, for some reason, don't, I'm more than happy with the split. But the main thing for this team is if they can continue applying what worked Wednesday night late, applying it early to get a good start, that will certainly help their chances to win. Thank you so much for taking time to join us. My name is Sean Coleman. You can follow me at StatsSEC, the show at Locked On Grizz on Twitter. You can find the podcast wherever podcasts are available. We're going to be back again tomorrow to do another nitty-gritty grind session previewing the 76ers game. Hopefully, we'll be able to do that with a record of 500. Don't forget to be on the lookout for news updates as far as the Grizzlies games go this weekend and the status of Ja Morant. Hopefully, all positive outcomes to where Morant's able to come back healthy and the Grizzlies are able to play their full slate of games will be on the horizon. But until then, hope you have a great Friday. It was a pleasure being here with you, and we'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.